Hey everyone, welcome to the Mass Construction Show. I'm your host, Joe Kelly, and this is a podcast about all things construction in Massachusetts and beyond. Today we're going to talk about NFPA 241, just covering the basics. Also, I get interrupted, so you'll hear me get flustered by some bags and all kinds of background noise that you couldn't hear. So we'll call this the Tyrant Edition. So here's the Tyrant now.
Okay, here, come over here.
So, Matthew, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I'm a construction worker.
A construction worker, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why? Do you like going to the construction site?
Yeah.
Do you remember when we went to Adams construction site? Yeah. What was the favorite thing you saw there?
The excavator.
The excavator, yeah. Would you like to ride excavators someday?
Yeah.
Operate them? What about the bulldozer? Wasn't that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Say bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Enjoy the show. Today, we're covering NFPA 241. What is NFPA 241? In my language, it's a regulation that lays out the minimum requirements for construction fire safety and what should go in a construction fire safety plan. Okay, that's basics, my words. And a little bit about how that should be implemented, but it's not really an implementation document. It's just a standard of minimums. How did we get to this? If you're in construction in Massachusetts in particular, you've probably been hearing a lot about this lately. Maybe you've been asked to submit one when you're filing for a building permit or a fire department permit. Anywhere from Southbridge to Westboro to Boston to Cambridge to Brookline are all communities that are now asking for plans. But how do we get to this, and why all of a sudden are we being asked to provide these things? Well, what happened was in 2015, the state of Massachusetts adopted a new fire code. And what they chose to adopt was NFPA 1. Okay, in NFPA 1, it says structures undergoing construction, alteration, or demolition, including those in underground locations, shall comply with NFPA 241. So in 2015, we adopt what's understood to be the fire code. Okay, which is NFPA 1. Prior to that, we had a homegrown code, which means the state of Massachusetts wrote it themselves. This time, they chose to adopt an international code, NFPA 1. And in NFPA 1, it says you need to comply with 241. So as of January 2015, that became the rule of law, we'll say, in the state of Massachusetts. So what does this standard apply to? Okay, does it, what does it apply? A lot of people think, okay, is there a dollar value threshold? Is there a size, commercial versus residential? But if you just back up to the definition that I read to you, it says structures undergoing construction, alteration, or demolition, yada, yada, yada. But construction, alteration, or demolition, that pretty much covers everything. So this standard applies to everything. But when do you need an actual plan, right? Because we always hear NFPA 241 plan. I think a better name would be a construction fire safety plan. But you could use those interchangeably. And sorry, I am doing this at home, so I'm hearing paper bags being thrown around by a three-year-old. Pardon me. But when do you need a construction fire safety plan? Okay, in 241, straight language from the code, it says a fire safety program shall be included in all construction, alteration, or demolition contracts. When do you need a plan? Construction, alteration, or demolition contracts. Everything, right? Essentially, everything needs a plan. Okay, and then if you keep reading this section of the code, it says, and the right of the owner to administer and enforce this program shall be established, even if the building is entirely under the jurisdiction of the contractor. So this is interesting. Having been a building inspector for 8.5 years and been in the industry for probably, add everything up, probably close to 20 years now, that's unique for code language, because typically in the code it will say the responsible party, the licensee, the design professional. Very rarely do you see the term owner. But 241 states owner, in a couple of locations. So that has kind of got the attention of the owners community in Massachusetts and Boston, because it's saying that, hey, we have some ownership, and the code language directly calls us out. And in this case, it doesn't say that they have to do anything, but it says they have the right to administer and enforce this program, the fire safety program, even if the building is entirely under the jurisdiction of the contractor. So one would think it would make sense if it's an occupied building. Obviously, the owner and their facility staff would have the right to control fire safety in their building. But what this says is, let's say you as a general contractor pull the permit. It's your license, wide open, empty site. You plop down a trailer and a fence and go to work with all your subcontractors. You're self-performing some stuff. The owner can show up on site and run fire safety on that site. That's what this regulation says. And what they really want is the owner to be responsible and not just say, hey, I've hired XYZ contractor. Their issue. What this reg is saying is, no, no, no. Mrs. Owner, Mr. Owner, you're responsible. And you can't just say, hey, I farm this out to somebody else. It's your building. You're responsible for fire safety. So what goes into a plan? A lot of it is going to be centered around like the site logistics. Where is fuel storage going? Where is the dumpster going to be placed? Where is the access to the closest fire department? The fire hydrant. Where are fire trucks going to get to it? Things like that. There'll be lots of site-related stuff. There is going to be fire department turnout information. Okay, and let's talk about what that means. It means when the fire department shows up, what do they need to know? Okay, let's say you've got a building coming out of the ground and you have temp heat. Okay, is it gas running to a BABFAR? Is it diesel? Where do I shut it off if it's temp gas? You have an electrical panel on your site, temp electric, and let's say you have a piece of plywood in the back of the site and the panel mounted to it. Does the fire department know where that is to shut off the electricity in emergency? So things like that. What do they need to know when they show up? Okay, are there keys that they need? What phone numbers do they call? Where to shut off emergency features? Is there appropriate signage for fire department connections? Things like that. That's all fire department turnout information. You're going to cover the basics, logs and forms, and what type of hot work permitting you're going to do. If you have any impairments on the project, you're going to address what the impairments will be, and you're going to have typical floor plans that will show the layout. It'll show critical facilities within the system. So those are the type of things that will go into a plan. Now, who can write a plan? That's a big question out there. Okay. I just talked to you about all the things, you know, impairments and fire department turnout information and shutoffs. And I think the answer to this is really, it depends. Okay, there's nothing in the regulation that says a person writing a plan has to have a particular certification or a stamp or anything like that. It's completely silent on that. It says they need to be knowledgeable about all the applicable standards and fire safety systems and processes and all that kind of stuff. So if you're doing a minor renovation and it's basically a paint and carpet and you're not impairing the life safety systems and you're not doing hut work, it's probably going to be a pretty basic plan. You're going to have some fire extinguisher locations. You're going to talk about, I don't have time to go into everything that's in the regulation, but it'll talk about trash removal, things like that. So you're going to include all those things in your plan, but that could really most likely be a one-page document, okay? And that would suffice. You get into a more elaborate project. Let's say it's in a hospital and you have smoke zones with firewalls that are being breached. It's an occupied facility. You're impairing smoke control systems and fire alarm and sprinkler systems, and it's phased. And you need to be familiar with NFPA 51B for hut work and fuel storage, and 99 for healthcare, and potentially 101 for life safety. That's the other end of the spectrum where, you know what, all right, maybe we want someone that's a professional or a co-consultant to come in and work with us. But there's a spectrum, right? So general contractors, I feel like, should do more on their own, okay, even though I happen to do it for a living. because I think they're the ones that are going to execute it. So if it's within their skill set, then they should probably be writing these plans themselves. So the answer really is, who can write a plan? It depends. And it depends on the complexity of a project. Another interesting thing that first jumped out when I read the document back in 2015, I think three things jumped out. It says you need to have a co-compliant set of stairs for with every floor as it goes up. Okay, so we used to be able to have gang ladders and the stairs would catch up as you build a building. This says no, you need to have a code-compliant set of stairs as what I would, how I interpret it. Basically, once you pour the concrete on the floor or once you set the plywood down on the floor, you need to have a set of stairs going there. It also says the trash has to be removed at the end of each work shift or sooner. Okay, you know, I've always been in the process of, you know, laborers on site, they're cleaning up, whether it's 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, whatever time they knock off, they stop and they go home. If the trash is all over the floor, it's over the floor, they start in the next morning, okay? Is there some wiggle room? That's really up to you, but the code says, no, at the end of each shift, all the trash is gone, okay? So that is a substantial change. Stairs, trash. But then the other big thing is, calls out what I'm saying is a new position. And here we go with the term owner again. It says, the owner shall designate a person who shall be responsible for the fire prevention program and who shall ensure that it is carried out to completion. So this really is a new position, fire prevention program manager. Okay, and that is to be designated by the owner. Now the owner could theoretically designate the general contractor, okay? But it doesn't say designate a company, it says designate a person. So that owner has to designate Sally Smith. And if Sally Smith is not competent, then that falls on the owner, right? So this is again where now, okay, the owner has some skin in this game. They're going to say that, no, I chose Billy Donovan to be responsible for the site. And if they find out that Billy Donovan knows nothing about fire alarm systems and sprinkler systems and smoke control systems, and that's what the plan is about, then that's going to need to be taken up with the owner who decided that that person is competent. What will this person do? It says clearly in there that this person will be the term they use, PAI, permitting authorizing individual. So they will issue the hot work permits on site, not to be confused with the municipal permit that some municipalities issue. So there are some municipalities that will issue a permit to the site for the iron worker to do welding, and that's fine. But NFPA 51B, which 241 references, says that you need to issue a permit yourself as a general contractor to Sally Smith to go to the seventh floor and weld the moment connection at column line 3C. Okay, that's the difference. They're responsible for site security. They're responsible for training and ensuring training. Okay, so, you know, I am intentionally call out ensuring training. So it's not saying they're responsible to do the training for everybody. It's just to make sure that they have the appropriate training for what they're being asked to do. State of Massachusetts, if you're doing hot work, you need to be certified. So you as the FPPM are responsible to make sure that the person performing the hot work and in Massachusetts and the person acting as the fire watch are certified. So that's what it means when you're responsible for training. Site security, that can go into it. I could go into that much more at length, but you know, whether that is site fencing or it is a person there at night or it's a sophisticated system of cameras, there's a few out in the market that are basically a monitored camera system, but the FPPM is responsible for that, and that's really about trying to prevent arson, right? They're responsible for weekly inspections, impairments of life safety systems. Any impairment happening to life safety system needs to be approved by the FPPM. It might also need to be approved by the AHJ, the authority having jurisdiction, okay? But it needs to be approved by the FPPM. The FPPM is also responsible for record keeping. If you look at one section of the code, it says a fire prevention program manager shall have knowledge of all applicable fire protection standards, available fire protection systems, and fire inspection procedures. Okay, that's kind of a pretty lengthy list of things this person has to know. So who's qualified to be an FPPM? Okay, on the heels of that language about all applicable fire protection standards and systems and all that, that really sounds like it's raising the bar, right? But I would say you go back to the language or go back to the, I was going to say discussion we were having, but however you want to word that, this is a podcast, I don't know, it really is a discussion, right? So it was that discussion we were just having about a renovation that's really just paint and carpet, okay? If it's paint and carpet and there's minor cosmetic work, right? Who's qualified to be the FPPM? What are the applicable fire protection standards that apply? It's going to be 241. It's going to be pretty minor. You're not impairing systems. You're not having fuel storage. You're not having hot work. You don't need to know 51B and I think it's 54 for fuel storage and all that kind of stuff. You don't need to know that. So who could be the FPPM? Probably a labor foreman or carpenter foreman, right? They could be. I mean, you might not want to go that route. You might want to have it be an assistant super with it, but it could be somebody with 1 year experience. Okay. Go back to that thought about a complicated hospital job with impairments and smoke control systems and smoke walls and fire zones and phased occupancy working in an OR or something like that. It's going to be a lot more complicated, and the FPPM should therefore have quite a bit more qualifications. So that's it. What are some of the first steps I could say you could take if you're getting into this? Read the regulation. NFPA241.org/241, okay, will get you the document for read-only. So again, NFPA.org/241. You can read it for free. You can't print it, copy it, stuff like that, but you can read it. And the reality is it's only about 6 pages within that document that you'd actually have to read. So I would say start by reading there. Go ahead and take your first pass at writing a plan. After reading, say, okay, let me look at my job and how I would write it. It might be sloppy, it might be lacking, okay, but you can at least start the process. Maybe look to start having a template saying, hey, at our company, we want to make sure all these things are covered, okay? I'm a little hesitant with templates because they become just boilerplates, you know, and it becomes almost like an architectural set of drawings where you see they're cutting and pasting details from other jobs and they don't make sense and the address isn't right. And, you know, so I'm a little hesitant on the template side, but maybe it's a checklist, however you want to word it. But, you know, make sure you have some standards in there that are minimums you want to make sure you have covered. Put together a hot work permit system is probably a good place to start. Look into that. Create a site inspection form. 241 says you need to do at a minimum weekly inspections. Okay, that would be the FPPM. Create logs because you need to log when you do hot work or when you bag smoke detectors, things like that. Maybe get some additional training, especially the folks that are going to be acting as fire prevention program managers on site. You want to make sure that they are qualified to execute this plan and really make sure you're documenting things. So that's it. I'd be interested to hear what you guys want to know more of. Is that enough about 241? Or are there sections you'd like some more detail on? That's really an overview. It's really just the basics. But there's so much confusion out there, and I continue to get so many questions. But hopefully it's clear that at least someone now knows what 241 is, why it's being enforced, and they have a general sense about what's in the code and what should be in a plan to some degree, and the job of an FPPM. So please get back. Let me know if there's something that I'm missing you want to hear more of. I am happy to talk about it. Take care, guys. Hey, everyone. Can't thank you enough for listening to the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you loved what you heard. If you did, If you wouldn't mind heading over to SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, wherever it is that you listen, and give us a rating. It would help us to get heard, which would be huge, keep this thing going. If you want to get more involved, head over to massconstruction.org. You can see what we do there. You can also connect with us on LinkedIn, Instagram, or Facebook, all from that page, whatever your medium is that you prefer. And last thing I got to say is thank you, thank you, thank you. Keep your hands away from me, yeah.